So welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast, where we'll be recapping the best of last weekend's UFC 251 card and previewing this week's midweek card, where Calvin Kattar and Dan Ige meet in the headline bout of UFC Fight Island. I'm Jake Jones, and my co-host this week is once more the man behind the scenes, Liam Heffernan. Liam, how are you doing?
I am good, really good. Thanks for having me on again.
Always a pleasure. It's always fantastic to speak to you, and a man who knows his stuff. That's what we like.
Allegedly, so, yeah.
Well, let's go straight into talking about UFC 251s and the events happened last weekend. What did you think of the card?
Do you know what? I thought there was so much hype around Usman Masvidal, and yet I thought every other bout on the main card was probably more exciting than that, which is the way it goes, right? I think it got hyped so much, it was always going to disappoint a little bit. It was a great card. From the early prelims right through to the main event, it was a great card.
Well, tell me about it, mate. Personally, I felt very underwhelmed by the last two fights. I kind of felt like it capped off a fairly decent card very anticlimactically. It was one of them things I kind of just felt like the card was built up so madly that it was going to be insane. And then kind of, when you watched it, every fight was good, but not like all the fights weren't, oh my God, this is mental. It was all kind of, most fights were going, yeah, this is all right. So I felt a bit underwhelmed in the end. First of all, I called that Usman would win it exactly the way he did. The clinch and wrestling and getting the unanimous decision victory. I don't blame him at all, but I wanted to see so much more from this. I said last week that he should keep it safe, and that's what he did. But now I'm seeing so many people on social media call for Usman to start being the champion that we all want to see. And I think that's a hard one, because we were so critical of Tyron Woodley when he was the champion, saying that he was boring and that he didn't really do much in a fight. But I don't really see how Usman is different. I used to stick up for Woodley with this whole argument. I remember when he fought Damian Maia, people said that, even Dana said, like, that's embarrassing. Now, one of my big points from that was that I think it was something like Woodley stuffed 21 out of 21 takedowns or something like that. I mean, that is insane. Like, that is, you are literally going in there and you're doing your job against one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists in the world. But then, as I said, now I kind of, I'm struggling to find where I like Usman. I know that he's a great champion in terms of his actual skill, and I think people are going to find it hard to beat him, but I don't see how he holds himself as the next star in the sport. I kind of feel like he's forcing this weird little persona where he's trying to be someone he's not. I'd prefer a champion who may have dominant long-winded fights, but a champion who kind of holds himself as a respectable figure outside of the octagon. So he kept saying in the pre-build-up for this, when they were asking about questions about Masvidal, he would go, "Who? Who?" And it's like, Jorge's bigger than anything he'll be at the moment. Jorge is the star of the sport, so don't disrespect him like that. I saw that the reports on this card got something like 1.3 million pay-per-view buys, which was the most since UFC 229, McGregor versus Khabib. And I'm sorry, but Usman and Burns was not going to do that. Masvidal brought a lot into this. So for me, I just feel like Usman, as I said, he kind of portrays this character where it feels very fake to me. And as I would actually prefer someone who was ridiculously dominant, a bit like Khabib, ridiculously dominant, and then kind of doesn't really get involved in all this trash talk, because he, as I said, he can build himself as a respectable fighter. Having said this, breaking down the fight, I just feel like this wasn't the fight that fans tuned in for. Usman to me is actually very like Khabib, the way he fights. He's just so dominant in the fight, in the entire fight, and he doesn't lose rounds. He does actually a very similar thing to Khabib as well, where he backs you up against the cage and then dives in to hold you there. And you notice this happened a lot in the fight. It's a really smart tactic. But I think for me, the frustration was coming from watching Masvidal kind of back against the cage and say that, and then Usman shoot. And I thought, it was that moment where you go, here we go again. You know what's going to happen now for the whole round. And for me, I just didn't see enough from Masvidal. And as I said, I absolutely love the guy. We saw him a few times throw this strike that caught Till, the switching stance and the overhand. I want to see that thrown more in this fight, because it nearly caught Kamaru a few times. Masvidal disguises that so well, because he comes forward and switches stances, but then throws the big haymaker at the same time. So it's very hard to time. It's so dangerous. But I kind of feel like besides that, Jorge wasn't really putting anything else together that ever threatened Usman.
No,
what do you think?
I think that Masvidal had his chances, and he had those small little flurries where he was attacking. But I think on the whole, we said this last week, it's easier to defend a title than it is to win it. And Usman has the style that lends itself very well to retaining belts once he's got them.
Yep.
He's a wrestler and a grappler, and I think it's very easy to wrestle your way to a decision when you're up against someone like Masvidal on 6 days' notice, because as everyone criticised, he got the clinch, he controlled about 2-3 minutes of every round at least, and Masvidal didn't really have much of a response for that. Occasionally, when he was separated from Usman, they were able to go at it a little bit, but Usman played a smart fight. It wasn't very entertaining, it wasn't very good to watch, but he's not there necessarily to entertain, he's there to keep his belt.
And this is exactly what I said last week, wasn't it, that he does not need to prove a point in there. He is the champion, so he doesn't need to go in there and prove a point for fans or entertain anyone. He just needs to go in there and win his belt, and that's exactly what he did. Now, saying that, what else can we say about the co-main event? Because this was pretty much not the same fight at all in the way it played out, but it was one of them fights as well where I felt a little bit underwhelmed. The biggest talking point, in my opinion, was that I feel like Max won that fight. I've seen stats since that showing that the third round apparently actually did go to Volkanovski in terms of the strikes that were landed. However, I was surprised how confident Max came in, and I felt like that shocked Alex too. What did you think?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say I told you so, because the first fight bored the hell out of me and I was not looking forward to this. Yeah. So for it to go to a decision was what I expected. I predicted Volkanovski was going to get the decision.
Yep.
I agree with you. I think Holloway rightfully feels a little bit hard done by there. I think he attacked the fight a lot more. But when you look at it round by round, I think the first two rounds absolutely went Holloway's way. Rounds 4 and 5 were Volkanovski. But round 3, you could have judged either way. Yeah. And when you're trying to win that belt, you need a clear 3 rounds yep. win. If you don't, it's never going to go your way.
Well, I think Volkanovski is very lucky to still remain the champion, despite the fact that I really like him as a fighter. He's one of the guys I support the most. But you rarely see a fighter get dropped twice in a fight and then come out as the champion. So, I don't know. I think one of the biggest questions that comes from this is, what is next for Max? He's on a 3-fight losing streak. I think he's got a lot of hard work now to work his way back by taking kind of one of two of the top contenders in the division out. I don't think he can go up a weight necessarily, because I don't think he's going to do a lot at lightweight. But as I said, I think he's going to now have to... He's definitely cemented his name as one of the best featherweights in the world anyway. But I think to get his title back now, he's going to have to beat two of them top guys. You're going to have to give Volkanovski a couple of different opponents now to defend the belt. And then, as I said, Max is going to have to get a little bit of a winning streak going on. Not as much as he used to in terms of like 7 fights, but I think he might need to get two of the big top guys out now.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Holloway had won this, then it perfectly sets up the trilogy fight, right? But he hasn't, so I think put that to bed. Volkanovski's beaten twice now. Holloway needs to go back to the drawing board, get a couple of big wins under his belt, and then maybe in a year or two he can look at getting another shot at the title at Volkanovski if he's still got the belt.
Absolutely. Well, let's move down the ladder and let's talk about some exciting fights from the night, the highlight fights. So the closing prelim bout between Volkan Ozdemir and Jiří Procházka. Damn, did Jiří make a statement.
What a fight.
Oh, I mean, it was fantastic. He came in against an experienced and dangerous UFC veteran, and he came in so confidently. He was showboating, just generally throwing wild strikes. You thought, okay, this is a way. I've said this before. When someone makes their debut, they want to make a statement. And
yeah.
As of what he did, it was a bit of a slugfest. But overall, I think Jiří looks a big problem. You don't put a man like Volkan Ozdemir out cold and not have the UFC world with their eyes focused on you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what worked in his favour this time and why he got the win is that he's got this really unconventional style about him, and I think that was really, really good to watch. I think the problem is now people know that he's got a slightly unconventional style. It won't necessarily mm-hmm. take the next fighter off guard, but I also think although Ozdemir was a very experienced fighter, it's very easy to get distracted by someone who's sort of bouncing around and yeah. and trying to throw you off like that, and someone who's a big kind of unknown on his debut. I think next time he's got to really watch his defense, because his hands drop a lot. He's showboating at times when it's easy to then catch him off guard, and I think his next opponent is going to take advantage of that. Personally, I think him and Prashaka and Johnny Walker is the fight to make next.
Well, let's talk a bit about that. So first of all, it is that question now, is have we got another hype train of a fighter on here? Have we got another guy who everyone's going to say he's going to be the man to beat John Jones, and then is he going to get knocked out in this next fight? I think jumping into these next fights, I mean, I've come up with a few different ideas on what I think might happen here. So he's jumped into the number 8 spot in the division, and now 24 of his 27 fights have ended in a KO victory for himself. I mean, he's got to get someone big, in my opinion. I see it going one of two ways. I know a lot of people have called for him and Walker because of the entertaining style of fight that the guys bring. And in general, they both kind of... they're only both starting off in the UFC, and they've both got that kind of hype train element around them, so someone's got to be derailed completely. But either, I also see an option of him going for fourth-ranked Corey Anderson, and I definitely think this is a fight that Prochaska should take. The reason... so, I know you were saying that you like the Walker fight. I genuinely don't. I get that they're both really entertaining guys, but from Yuri's point of view, I don't get why you take out the number 7 person in the world, and you were the former rising champion, and then you take a guy who's coming off a loss, two losses, sorry, he's ranked 5 or 6 places below you. Besides the money and the fact that obviously you're going to get eyes on you, I don't really think the fight makes sense.
See, I disagree with that. I think these are two guys that have everything to gain from winning that fight, and similarly everything to lose. You've got Johnny Walker, who is on a 2-fight losing streak. He started off on this massive hype train, and then Corey Anderson really knocked it out of him, and then Krylov basically gave him a masterclass in grappling. And he needs a win now. If he wants to break into the top 10, he needs a win. Mm-hmm. Prashaka, similarly, he's where Johnny Walker was 3 fights ago in terms of hype. He's got a great win over Özdemir. And I think, yeah, you can give him someone like Corey Anderson, but the risk there is the same as it was with Johnny Walker, that he's going to go too big too soon. And yeah, if he beats Corey Anderson or someone of that caliber, it's great for him. He'll be straight up there, top 10, maybe even, you know, top 6, pushing for a top spot in the rankings. But if he loses it, you've got this problem like with Johnny Walker, where it knocks you for 6, and you almost feel bad for the guy because you're starting again. And I feel like Johnny Walker obviously took that fight with Anderson, but he shouldn't have. And I think Prashaka needs to get a few wins under his belt with sort of top 15 fighters, not run before he can walk, get that experience in the UFC, and then he can start looking at pushing for a top 5.
Sure. Well, so for me, Walker, if you had actually... everyone who thought Walker was a hype train, the thing is, if you had actually looked at some of his previous fights, you saw that he was very, very wild. In one of his knockout losses, I think it's to, I think his name's Enrique da Silva Lopez, he literally, he gets dropped very early on, and now he's just trying to get up, and he's just getting flopped each time. He's throwing wild, he just keeps it, and it's quite embarrassing, really.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not doubting that he's a great fighter still, but I kind of saw this happening. But whereas someone like Prochaska, I haven't really seen his previous fights where he's got knocked out as being horrendously bad or to more of a beginner's level. So the reason that fight makes sense to me, as if I was Prochaska, was Corey's coming off loss and he's number 4 in the world, and we know that Corey is very susceptible to an opponent that has this raw KO power. So everyone else who's kind of above Prochaska now, they're all matched up. You've got Anthony Smith versus Alexander Rakic in August. You've got Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos in September. So for me, the winner or loser of Anderson versus Prashaska gets a winner or loser of one of these fights, and to me that makes sense. They'll want to push, I believe the UFC want to push Yuri in, because then they can push their way into the European market more as well. He's a Czech fighter, so I think the idea that maybe he can get a lot of hype around him early on, they're going to want to push that. And as I said, although Anderson derailed Walker, I think Anderson would also like taking this fight, because the idea that Yuri does have a wild style, so either he could put Yuri out or he could dominate him. I think it's another fight where both fighters have a lot to lose and a lot to gain from it. And as I said, if I was Prochaska here, that would be my view, is I'm very experienced in the sport, and overall I genuinely think that Corey's the only guy who's not matched up, and he's also probably the guy that Prochaska could catch. So then you push yourself into the fourth place, and you're then talking one of the biggest fights to set you up for a title shot. But then, as I said, I do completely understand your view on it, in the fact that if he loses that, then everything's gone already. And I also think Walker's a very, very winnable match for him. We'll just have to see. As I said, it can go either way, but it'd be a fun few months to find that out.
Yes.
Right, next up, let's talk about Rose and Andrade. What did you think, man?
It was a great fight, wasn't it? The women really brought it on Saturday. I thought the best fights came in the women's weight classes, without a doubt. I thought, on a bit of a side note, I thought Ribas was phenomenal. She had a bit of an easy fight, I think. It was a bit fodder for her in Bantam, but what a great performance. Andrade and Namajunas, I thought, was everything we expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely went at each other, and I predicted Andrade to get the decision, so I was really, really disappointed when it didn't go her way, but I completely get why it was a split. Rose, I think, did probably outfight her. I thought she put in a blinding performance, but I think they were both winners after that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, so I agree. I think Rose is overall the much better fighter, and I think maybe, I don't know if it was that she got confident or that she did get caught a couple of times and she was slowing down, because I haven't really seen that from Rose before, so I was a little bit surprised. But man, did this fight deliver, and did the women on the night deliver as well. As you said, it was everything we thought, really. Andrade hit hard and caused visible damage to Rose, but overall, Rose was just too good over three rounds and was really able to implement her game plan to pick up what is an incredible win. So for me, it was, as I said, it was what I kind of predicted the fight to go out to be, and I think that's just because the way Rose fights. Andrade, you saw throughout the fight, swings heavy because she is shorter, much shorter than Rose, I think 4 inches. So she really has to get them powerful hooks in there to try and knock Rose out. Whereas Rose, as I said, can play a lot more down the middle and kind of just piece her up when she needs to. So what is next for Rose? And in my opinion, it's got to be the title. She's ranked first now. Zhang has already said that she would quite like this fight, and she thinks that delivers the best matchup in the division. And it is going to deliver fireworks. If JJ and Zhang produce arguably one of the greatest fight of female fights of all time, if not the greatest fight, then I think Rose and Wiley will also produce more. I see Rose giving Zhang the hardest fight of her life. I think Zhang overall is the best female fighter in that division. I just think the way she fought JJ was just crazy. But I do think Rose has that power to put her out, because we haven't necessarily seen Zhang face that controversy yet. JJ is so... She's a bit like Holloway in the fact that she can get people out there by volume. So it's not necessarily that one punch that's going to knock them out. It's just by peppering them up with jabs. But we have seen Rose knock people out before. We've seen Rose knock JJ out. So it's such an interesting fight, in my opinion, because, as I said, we haven't seen Zhang face that controversy yet, where she's been hit really hard.
But I think Rose
could do that.
We did see Joanna drop Zhang a couple of times, though. So if she then comes up against someone who does have the power to knock you out, then I think that's a very interesting fight. Because Zhang, as we've seen in her past couple of championship bouts, she's not scared to attack it. She won't do an Usman, or probably more correctly, she won't do an Adesanya and just sort of dance around the octagon and avoid any sort of actual fight.
Yeah.
She does put on a show. So against someone like Rose, I think that's a great fight to make.
Absolutely, no, I totally agree. I'm really looking forward to it. Well, to cap off UFC 251's recap, let's talk about the final fight, the title fight between Aldo and Yan. Now, to me, this or Rose was the best performance. How good did Yan look? Literally, what we said last week, and I know I've said that a lot, but when you predict 11 or 12 out of 13 fights correct, I think I have a bit of confidence in what I say. Now, of course, I'm only kidding there, but genuinely, Yan is so good all around. I noticed across social media as well, whilst the fight was going on, people kept saying Yan is a bit slow. Let's not forget he was fighting Jose Aldo, and you see the way Jose rips them body shots. He's so ridiculously quick.
Yeah.
I think Cody Garbrandt was actually one of the main guys who said that that Jan looks too slow. But I think we know why he did that. We're seeing this all over social media now, these two promoted to fight. However, interesting today, Cody was actually matched up with Marlon Moraes. So that's going to be an interesting fight. I think it's October or November time.
Interesting, but yeah.
I think Saturday brought... I think we saw a champion who's going to be the champion for many years to come now, in my opinion. What
Absolutely.
Do you think?
Yeah, I thought Jan fought like a champion. He looked good. He, out of the three title fights on Saturday, he was the one who looked like he was here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great fight. And you said last week, you know, Aldo, he's got such experience and maturity behind him.
Mm.
And it was never going to be an easy fight. He was being underestimated, I think. He was a bit further down the rankings, and people were expecting it to be a bit of an easy win. That wasn't the case. And it's almost unfair that he got finished, because it was in round five.
Oh, God,
they were
yeah.
really going at it. And I feel a bit sorry for the guy, because he put on such a hell of a fight against Jan. And there's no shame in losing to him. You've got a guy there who could easily dominate that division for a while.
Absolutely, Matt. I totally agree. And as you said, I felt for Aldo. I felt like the fight went on too long. I know that this is another kind of topic of conversation. I know a lot of people have said that I think it was Leon Roberts refereeing might be sacked because of it. I did feel like maybe Aldo was finished a little bit earlier than he was. But overall, I think he showed champion's heart as well. And obviously, I just wish him a speedy recovery. My only thing from the fight as well was in the second and third round, or it might have been the third and fourth round, we saw Aldo landing big body shots and piling the pressure on Jan. There was a few times where Jan had to face adversity and he came through.
Yeah.
Now, Jan will be used to kind of taking these body shots with training Tiger Muay Thai, but he will be cautious of that in the future now, because it nearly, very nearly exposed him. There was one time where Aldo really put that pressure on and had him up against the cage. I thought, this might be it. And then, as I said, he overcame it. I'm not sure what's next for Jose Aldo now. I'm really not sure, because obviously you've got people like Aljamain Sterling and Cody Garbrandt in the picture. In my opinion, for Jan, Aljamain Sterling deserves the title shot.
Yes.
And in my opinion, I actually think Jan wins that fight still. I think he takes him out. Unless Aljamain can submit him, because we haven't necessarily seen Jan face that adversity yet. But we'll see. But then I would quite like to see, I know that... Cody's just been matched up with Moraes. And I think that's a hard fight for Cody, because I think Moraes has shown before that he can knock people out so easily. And I know Cody has as well, but Cody, when he loads up, he dips quite heavily. And we know that Moraes has that left kick that will just shut anyone's lights out. So I would have actually quite liked to have seen Aldo versus Cody, because I think it was a fight that Cody could have won, and I think it was a fight that Aldo could have also won.
Yeah.
And then that would have probably set up Cody versus Jan, if Cody was to win that. So I think now that Cody and Moraes is in the picture, this is definitely spicing things up a bit. And as I said, I think it just begs the question now, what is next for Jose Aldo?
Yeah, my concern for Aldo is that he's now going to be the guy that starts slipping down the rankings. He'll be put up against the up-and-comers, the ones who are just on the fringes of the top 15. Give them Aldo, get them a respectable win on their record to get them in the rankings. I think, obviously, another win for Aldo will change that completely.
Yep.
It depends how he reacts to his next fight now. But he's on the cusp now, isn't he? He could either get a big win and go straight back up there into title contention, or he'll lose his next fight and he'll just slip down and down.
Absolutely. So for those who are listening, let us know what you think about UFC 251. If you watch UFC 251 on the highlights, let us know if there's another fight that you guys think we should have covered here. We're now moving on to our preview of Wednesday night's UFC card, UFC Fight Night Cater versus EJ. And I love a few of these fights for the midweek card. Basically, the fights on the main card for me are fantastic.
Yes.
Firstly, let's talk about our girl, the UK's finest, Molly McCann. What do you think about this, mate?
I'm such a big fan of Molly McCann. Mm-hmm. So the first time I saw her fight was in London last year. And I just love her resilience. She's so just determined. She's like this sort of little pit bull that just doesn't give up.
Yeah.
And you there's something about her that you just think she shouldn't be winning, but she just grinds it out. And okay, she needs a finish now. She needs to start getting knockouts to I think make her a real contender in the eyes of Dana White. But I think with three wins, she's got a big fight ahead of her in Santos. I think that this will be a toughest fight. I think Santos is going to be going in feeling really good. But I think this is a fight that Molly can win.
I totally agree. And you just shined on that. I think she needs to get that knockout now, which is going to make Dana push her. Mm. But I also think, I genuinely believe that Dana's going to push her regardless. Even if I think she's got to win this fight. But she's a UK star from Liverpool. And we've seen the same thing with Darren Till, is that they do want to push into this market as well. And she's definitely one of the figureheads for the sport now in the UK. So, but she, as you said, she's coming up against a very, very dangerous opponent in Talia Santos. She's 15-1 in the sport, and 10 of those wins come by TKO or KO finishes.
Yeah.
It's a really, for me, this is a massive test for both fighters. Molly has a chance here to ride a 4-fight win streak and put an extremely dangerous striking artist in the sport. Talia lost her UFC debut via unanimous decision to Mara Romelo Barella. So, in a fight, that was a fight that really caught Santos out. As I said, she was 15-0 there, and overall looked like a very, very good striker in the sport. But yep. She came up against an experienced fighter, and she couldn't really do much. Over three fights, she landed about 50 to 60 strikes, which is good. Barella landed 80 or more. So she kind of beat her. She beat a striker at her own game. And I think this is what we will see on Wednesday night. As you mentioned, Molly loves these gritty fights. And I think Santos is very dangerous, but Molly thrives in fights like this.
Yes.
She's won three in a row since her UFC debut loss to Gillian Robertson. And she's beaten the likes of Priscilla Cochera, Ariana Lipsy, and Diana Belbita. Now, these are all strikers who had so much potential, and Molly outstruck them all. And it's not just about outstriking in terms of like, oh, the footwork's fantastic or anything like that. It's about having that grind, that endurance, and that heart.
Yep.
And Molly really has it. Yes. She's so good at making these dirty boxing fights, and it's literally these fights where the hardest and most durable fighter is going to come out on top.
Yeah.
She's not afraid to take a punch, to land a punch, and I think that's genuinely what's going to make her make this fight very dirty, a slugfest, where she will pick up the win.
Exactly, yeah. And I think when you look at her last three fights, if you just look at them stood next to the ref at the end of the fight, she looks worse every single time. But it's because, as you say, she's prepared to take damage in order to give it, and she does. But I think also we should call out the fact that for anyone that's looking at the stats in this fight, Molly looks like she's being outclassed in terms of this huge height and reach advantage by Santos. But Molly consistently is beating fighters with a big height and reach advantage. So I wouldn't let that sway you towards Santos at all. Molly is more than used to taking on fighters like that.
Exactly. Well, Molly will be used to fighting on the inside, and I think that's what we're going to see here, is that she might not be able to hit her down the middle in terms of using her jabs and her crosses as effectively, but Molly's got power, and she can definitely throw some hooks in there that will catch Santos out. Also, it's really worth noting, I don't know if you've seen, but she looks incredible in the weigh-in today.
Yeah.
She looks in the best shape that I think we've ever seen Molly in. I think come Thursday morning for the UK fans watching, I think we're going to see Molly McCann in the big picture for the strawweight division.
Absolutely. I tweeted about 6 months ago, actually, that Molly is three fights away from being in title contention.
Yep.
And I would love nothing more than for Dana White to set up a fight night main event in London with Molly against Shevchenko for the title in a I don't know, 2021 is maybe too soon, but 2022 London McCann title fight, that would be a dream.
So I was actually listening to an interview earlier, and Molly has said that she's got a 2-year plan till she fights Valentina.
Yeah.
So I think, as I said, you could be right there. Whether or not they do it in London, I'm not sure, but overall it definitely wouldn't not make sense. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
she will bring the fans in without a doubt. She'll bring the fans from Liverpool. Like, if there's any Americans or any people not from the UK listening, that I don't think they understand how much we invest in our fighters from either Liverpool or from Manchester. Like, even Irish fighters, when there's an Irish event over here, the whole of the Irish crowd come here. And the same will apply for if there's an event in London, Liverpool, London will become Liverpool.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
I do think if any title fight is most likely to be held in London, it's going to be that one, because unfortunately women's title fights still seem to get either lower billing on a pay-per-view or main event on a fight night. And Dana White knows he's going to get a sellout crowd for very expensive tickets if he puts a title fight with Molly in London.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with you. Well, next up, let's break down Jimmy Rivera versus Cody Starman. Now, what a fight this is. How do you see this playing out?
I don't know, is the short answer. I think it's going to be a good one to watch, but I don't know how it's going to go. I think I'm expecting a finish. I think someone's going to end up on the floor. But it's a coin toss who that's going to be, I think.
Yeah. So I think, I agree, this is a hard fight. But for me, Jimmy Rivera a few years ago was 22-1 in the sport, but now he's gone 1-3 in his last four bouts. He hasn't really made the adaptations to the style of fights that he needs to have made, and he keeps getting beaten by the better fighter each time now. And I know that seems stupid to say that you get beaten by the better guy, but as I said, I think it's because he's not changing things up. It's not like he's winning the fight and then getting caught. He's genuinely just losing the fight all around. As I said, this is a guy who's seen the last four, like, the last four fights that we've seen, well, isn't a guy who should be 22-1 in the sport. He's a UFC veteran, but sadly, once more, I see him losing to Starman here. I think if he's gonna win, he needs to change things up massively, and I think he really needs to go in there and put on a performance. Because as I said, you used to be 22-1, and now you're 3-1 in your last 1-3 in your last four fights. There needs to be a statement made. But Starman is so good. He put in such a great performance against Brian Kelleher. And I've always thought Starman looked a big problem. Even from his earlier fights, I used to go, that guy's good. And I mean, he used to be fighting on the early prelims, or maybe just after the early prelims, when he was about, I think it was 18-1 in the sport or something like that. And you'd be like, that's very impressive to be on there. And I think tomorrow it's really going to show how good he is. He had so much focus in the Kelleher fight, considering what happened a week or so prior to that. And as I said, the story that he's had is so sad, but it's also so, I guess, encouraging or inspiring that he's come out there and he put on that performance and proved why he's where he is today. I think we'll see Starman tested, but overall, I think it's a fight where he can really implement his style. I think he can hurt Jimmy a lot, and overall, put on a dominant performance that really catapults him into the top contender spot in either the bantamweight division or the featherweight division.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, Joe, I'm on a Tapology as we're talking, just looking at my predictions. And for some reason, a couple of days ago, I went for Rivera decision. And I don't know what made me think that. But I'm changing. I'm going with you. Do you know what? After last week, I'm trusting you religiously.
I appreciate that a lot. Well, before we go on to talk about our final bout, I just want to shine a light on a bout between Abdul Razak Al-Hazan and Munir Lazez. So this is a fight that any fan out there should not miss. If you've only got into sport recently, you won't know Abdul Razak Al-Hazan too well. But he was suspended from the sport since 2018 after two alleged rape charges came from an incident back in March 2018. He was indicted in September 2018. And in March 2020, the court found him not guilty of these charges. So he now returns 22 months since his last fight. And as I said, I think there's fans out there who won't know who he is, or there's fans who will have remembered him, but also will know who he is, but maybe have forgotten him. This is a man who's got a 10-1 record, and I genuinely think he's possibly the most dangerous fighter in that division. He has KO victories over Charlie Ward, two back-to-back KOs of Sabah Hamasi, and then a 43-second KO over the fan favourite Nico Price. He is a force not to be reckoned with, and I genuinely think we'll see this guy fight for a top 5 spot within 12 months of his return.
Yeah, but it's such a competitive division at the moment. Welterweight is just, I would argue, welterweight right now, strongest division we've got.
I think between the featherweight, lightweight and welterweight, I think you've got some ridiculous people in there who just, it's so hard to even call who's kind of going to be next for things. Yeah. I think even, like, I know it sounds stupid to say, but where the sport is at the moment, from bantamweight above, I think we have so many great fighters in the kind of top 10 picture.
Yeah.
That it's going to be really hard to kind of... The competition now has really been risen. And as I said, I think it's going to be... I think Alhazen is also going to be added to that. However, I don't want to rule Alhazen out. He's a huge underdog. So what I was looking at Twitter earlier was that apparently a lot of bets have come in for Alhazen to win this fight because... It's the question between if this is because people genuinely think Lazarus is good and that he has the skill sets to beat Razak. Let's be honest, he's 9-1. Like he's clearly very good. But I think it's just because there could also be this question that are people betting on him because he's such a big underdog in this? I don't know what the odds are, but it seems huge. So I think we're going to see kind of a fight here that a lot of the eyes will be on Alhazen. But can't rule Azaz out because I said that will also put in 10-1, and anyone who's got that type of record in this sport and a victory over someone like Alhazen is also going to have some eyes on him. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah. I think the fact that it's his debut will. I think what we said before, being a debut fighter in the UFC could go either way. Either he's going to be a bit scared, or he's going to smash it.
Absolutely. Well, finally, let's talk about our main event bout. Between Boston striking standout Calvin Kattar and Hawaii's Dynamite Dan EJ. Oh my god, this fight is insane. This genuinely has potential to be on the same level as Burgos versus Emmett. I think people might overlook this fight and they will live to regret that. Like this fight will have absolute fireworks. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this has all the makings of a surprise fight of the night. And I think... considering how underwhelming Masvidal Usman was on Saturday, I think this is going to come out of the blocks and really, really surprise people. It has the makings of a great fight. I think, you know, when you look at their numbers, Kattar lands a hell of a lot more strikes and he can take more strikes. But Ige is very good on the ground. I think we're going to see a bit of everything. I think we're going to see takedowns. We're going to see a lot of striking. I honestly don't know how this is going to pan out over five rounds. I think that's what's going to be most interesting. I do not see this going all the way at all. My gut feeling is that Kattar is going to get the finish.
Yeah, so one thing I always like to put out there, and I know I've said about other fighters in this that we've broken down, that they're my favourite, etc. Genuinely, Kattar and EJ are two guys that I want to see succeed in the sport no matter what. They are on the same level as Emmett and Burgos for me. As in, when they fought, I don't want either of them to lose because I think they're both so good. Both these guys hit incredibly hard and they shine in the striking division. Kattar has KO victories over some of the featherweight division's best guys. You've got Shane Burgos, Chris Fishgold, Ricardo Lamas, and obviously Jeremy Stevens in his last bout. And what a KO that was. I think Kattar's striking might be the best in the division. The way he is such an incredible boxer. However, EJ, he's only lost twice in his career, and he's riding a 6-fight win streak over guys like Kevin Aguilar, Mirsad Bektic, Edson Barbosa. These guys are phenomenal. And when you talk about striking, Edson Barbosa is one of the first guys you talk about. Now Dan beat him. And as you said, his wrestling is also phenomenal. I think this fight is interesting. These guys are known for putting their opponents down. I think both these guys have at least rocked their opponents in every fight they've had, and they've outstruck some of the best fighters in the world. So, for me, I see the fight going likely this way, is that I think Kattar will utilise his superior boxing and use his reach advantage over EJ. However, EJ does have heavy hands, and he tends to throw his punches around people's guards. He throws overhands and he throws hooks, and they are so fast. That will come in handy against a guy who tends to throw strikes down the middle, who tends to use his kind of 1-2 boxing, who tends to use his jab to keep away from people. For me, I think I see Kattar pick up the TKO victory or unanimous decision win, as I just don't think EJ has the ability to outstrike Kattar. I think he's got the power, but Kattar's never been finished with strikes, and EJ has been knocked down before. So I think that's going to be the struggle, is that EJ really needs to dig deep in this fight and he needs to kind of catch Kattar off guard, and I think Kattar's too good for that. Kattar's really tall for the division and EJ's quite short for it. So I think, yes, he might be able to catch him, but I see him struggling to land just because Kattar's so good with his boxing. He's big, and I think we'll see him catch Dan a few times throughout the fight and cause problems. as you said, the only other thing that I see maybe happening here is that EJ comes in and he drops his striking and he goes for a wrestling match instead. Because if he does that, then he might have a chance to be able to hold Kata down and beat him via unanimous decision, because that can happen. For me, though, I think I see Dan playing a wild fight and implementing his explosive style. I just don't see that paying off. I said he's really got to dig deep, and I put my money on Kata, but I have no doubt EJ could do it. I think like Emmett and Burgos, these two are two of my favourite up-and-coming fighters, and I just don't want to see either of these guys lose. But what I would quite like to see is, I'd like to see the winner face Emmett and the loser face Burgos.
Interesting.
As I said, someone's got to lose in this, and if I was going to go for it, I think if Kata wins, we'll see him face Emmett, and then the winner of that could face either Ortega or the Korean Zombie, or basically go for a title shot at some point. And then if EJ did lose, he'd face Burgos, which is also another Fight of the Night contender. So you're kind of getting these guys in there who are all so worthy of being in the division, but who aren't in that top five picture just yet. Now, these guys need to fight against each other, not only because it makes sense, but also because in general, they're going to put on performances that get, win or lose, that get some eyes on them. As I said, I think if I'm going to go for an actual prediction, I think Kata gets the job done early, and I don't think we'll actually truly see what these guys could produce. But I have no doubt if this goes three rounds, they're going to get a nice little 50k bonus added into their account.
I fully expect that. Yeah. I think it's a main event that deserves its billing, without doubt.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree, mate. So before we start signing things off, we're going to talk about some fight announcements that have recently happened. Today, we found out that Cody Garbrandt and Marlon Moraes are going to be fighting. And what about that is? Liam?
Yes, I think it's going to be explosive. When is that rumoured for?
I believe it's October or November time.
Right, yeah, that's going to be a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Any fights to announce from yourself?
Well, I don't think the UFC have made it official yet, but it looks like Khabib and Gaethje are unifying the lightweight title in September.
Yeah, I've heard the rumours of that too. And obviously, this was a fight I think we all knew was going to happen down the line, because it had to happen. But for September, I'm surprised as well, and I'm excited about that. I think that's a really good time frame for it. I think it's actually sooner than I expected, at least. And I think we're all going to tune in for that. And once more, I think that's another fight which could potentially break some pay-per-view buys.
Yes.
And well, then, obviously... Sorry,
I think
Karen.
We're all waiting for the 30-0 now, aren't we, for Khabib?
Yeah. I mean, I think Gaethje's going to give Khabib a hard fight. I still think Khabib's going to win. But, I mean... What a lot of people say is that Gaethje was actually an All-American wrestler as well, that he's a wrestling champion. Now, I haven't actually seen this in any of his fights because, as I said, his striking is so good and he's so ruthless with his leg kicks, and generally the way he fights doesn't really lend itself to wrestling. I think it's going to be a really interesting fight. What I would genuinely like to see is, as I said earlier, you saw with Usman and Masvidal, you could tell Usman was setting up to go in for the takedown. Now, I genuinely think, I'm not doubting, I mean, Khabib's ability is just ridiculously good. And the way he holds people, he does this little thing where he wraps people's legs up, where he literally straightens their legs out underneath him and just wraps them up. And then he just holds them and pummels them. Now, just before that, he does set up a lot of his takedowns by literally backing people up in the cage with very light jabs. And then you'll see him throw a jab and he'll run in and he'll lean his head to one side and then just hold him up against the cage. Now, I would like to see someone throw a knee there.
Yeah.
So I think if someone catches him with a knee, I think he's going to have a lot of problems. I think he's too smart that he's not going to want to strike with Gaethje. I know Conor's obviously known as one of the best strikers, but I think Khabib had his own issues with Conor that he just wanted to pummel him anyway. He can't go into Gaethje's fight feeling emotional because, as I said, I genuinely think that Gaethje could switch his lights out.
Yeah.
So he needs to stick to doing what he does best, because I've not necessarily seen Gaethje's wrestling tested, despite the fact that everyone says he's a great wrestler. I've not seen it, and I've never seen anyone out-wrestle Khabib. So
wouldn't there be some poetic irony, though, to Khabib being retired by being tapped?
That would be incredible, yeah. I mean, I think we saw a few times in the Poirier fight, we saw some very, very dangerous guillotines attempt from Poirier. They just didn't pull off. So, as you said, there would be some humongous irony to that. But I personally see him going 30-0.
Yeah.
But we'll see, because as I said, I think Gaethje's very, very dangerous, and it's a really, really exciting fight. I think to put out there now, Gaethje's probably my number one fighter, so I will be backing him there. But as I said, I'll have a bet on Gaethje, but I think obviously Khabib is probably the all-time greatest in that division. Right, that is all we have time for this week on the Ultimate MMA podcast. So thank you guys for tuning in, and make sure to listen, like, and subscribe to us. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be recapping the results of this week's midweek card, and we'll also be previewing the next Fight Island card, which takes place this Sunday in the UK, or Saturday for the US. We will see a new flyweight champion crowned when Divisa Figueiredo takes in Jose Benavidez.
Yeah, let's just hope he makes weight.
Absolutely. I think the first time around, he looked absolutely great. His striking for a flyweight, it's stupid, the power he has. But as you said, he let himself down by not making weight. And I think now there was obviously a head clash in the first fight, so we might see Benavidez come out now and fight a very, very different fight. Obviously, once more, if Figueroa doesn't make weight, there's obviously rumours that Alexander Pantoja will step in there. So I still think we're going to get the fight regardless. But obviously, if Figueroa misses weight a second time for a title fight, then that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. Liam, thank you so much for joining us this week, mate, and we'll get one out in a few days.
Yeah, it has been a pleasure, as always.